You're listening to The Continuing Adventures of Billy Barbarian, written and read by J.R. Murdoch. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdoch.com. Jack called Billy three times to try and get him to hurry up. During one call, Billy stopped, paying attention when he saw four people dressed in black robes like the one Jack had warned him about. He followed them, watching to see what they were doing. No one seemed to be paying any attention to them. He watched from around a corner. By the time he thought he would catch up, they disappeared. He tried to explain to Jack and Fat.
"It no matter now."
Fat frowned and crossed his arms.
"We keep sharp eye out."
"So, what do we do now?" Billy asked.
"As I told you when I called, Iman is on his way here. He wants to meet with us."
"Okay."
"Oh, I saw another dragon landing on my way back. It said Stump on it. Is Ronald Stump going to be here too?"
Billy asked, his eyes wide with excitement. Fat and Jack exchanged uneasy glances. Jack pulled Billy aside.
"Billy, remember what I said to you earlier. You don't talk to Mr. Stump. Understand?"
Jack's steady tone had a hint of warning in it. Billy hadn't heard Jack talk like that before.
"Why not? It's better for you, the job, if you just don't do that."
"If you say so, Jack. I mean, he's just a man, so I don't see why it'd be a problem. He's just a man."
"No, Billy, he's not just a man. The king aside, Stump is the most powerful man in Scythopolis. He doesn't need to be bothered by the likes of us. End of conversation, Billy. You just don't do it."
Billy nodded. As he did, voices came from the direction of the arras. At first he thought it might be just a couple of people, but he counted at least 10 different people before they came into view. The first person wasn't hard for Billy to place, based on Jack's earlier description. The man, dressed all in gold from head to foot. Literally, from gold shoes, gold pants, gold shirt, gold cloak, and gold hat onto his golden hair, the man wore more gold clothing than Billy ever thought possible. Ronald Stump walked with his head high. On either side of him were a man and a woman, both garbed in charcoal gray outfits that looked horribly uncomfortable. Jack whispered names in Billy's ear.
"The woman is Caroline, and the man is Jorge."
Billy cut off Jack.
"Hor who?"
"No, Jorge. Just call him George if you have trouble pronouncing his name. Those two are Stump's personal assistants."
"So, what is he doing here?" Billy asked.
"Well, he is the sponsor of the concert, right?"
Billy thought about that for a moment. In a way, it made sense, but he still wasn't sure how someone could make money by hiring a singer to sing for a bunch of people. Someday, he hoped all of this would make sense.
"Hello,"
Ronald Stump said as he approached the three. Fat knocked on the door to announce a guest, and then opened the door for Ronald. He and his two assistants entered. The other seven people who were along with Ronald stayed and milled about in the hallway with Billy, Jack, and Fat.
"How come he gets to go in?"
Jack sighed.
"He put up the money for everything. He gets to do whatever he wants. It's just that simple, Billy."
"So, who are these people?"
Billy asked, pointing at the group of men and women in uncomfortable suits, standing and looking confused.
"They're also personal assistants for Mr. Stump, as well as for Caroline and Jorge. Mr. Stump is so busy that even his assistants need assistance."
"What does Mr. Stump do?"
"I told you before, back before dinner, that Mr. Stump is a real estate developer, the biggest developer in the world."
"You told me that, and I forgot to ask. What is real estate development?"
"Mr. Stump buys land and builds things on that land. He has 8 or 9 towers around town, his casinos, and he's also the one who built the mall and most of the apartment buildings."
"Why?"
"To make more money."
"Why does he need so much money?"
"Why does anyone need money? To survive. Beyond that, it's to buy nicer things. But Mr. Stump also gives back to the city. He built a bunch of parks and playgrounds and schools, too."
"He sounds like a great guy, so why can't I talk to him?"
"Billy, he's a powerful man. Powerful men don't like to be bothered."
The door to Celine's dressing room opened, and Stump and his assistants came out.
"Have a great show, Celine. It was a pleasure to meet you."
Stump eyed Fat with a squint-eyed expression and nodded his approval. He looked at Jack and gave no response. He stopped and looked at Billy. Stump actually stood as tall as Billy, and they looked eye to eye.
"You're a big one. Are you here to protect Miss Celine Dijon as well?"
Jack gasped. Fat sidestepped to be closer to Billy and intervene if needed. Billy's mouth went dry, and his answer was only a gasp.
"Yes?"
Sounds like you're thirsty.
Stump held his hand out toward one of his assistants, and immediately the assistant gave him a bottle of Stump water.
Here, have some water. It's the best in South Parch. Are any of you hungry? I can have some food brought to you.
Billy's eyes lit up at the prospect of food, but Fat intercepted this question.
We fine. Thank you, sir.
Ronald Stump pursed his lips and narrowed his eyes as he looked down at Fat.
I'm not asking you. I'm asking this one. What's your name, son?
Billy?
Billy, are you hungry?
Billy paused and tried to sneak a glance down at Jack and Fat.
I didn't ask them. I asked you a very simple question, and I want a simple answer. Are you hungry?
Something in Ronald's voice bothered Billy. He found himself nervous, his palms sweaty, his knees weak. If Jack hadn't said so many times not to talk to this man, maybe this wouldn't be so difficult. That must be what bothered him, Jack's insistence about not talking to a man of power. But Billy had been asked, and he had to answer truthfully.
Yes.
There, that wasn't so hard.
Caroline, I want you to make sure Billy here gets something to eat.
Stump stuck out his hand. Billy shook it, happily and vigorously.
That's the kind of attitude I like to see. I'm Ronald Stump. Come by one of my towers one day. Set up an appointment to meet with me.
Stump handed a gold card to Billy.
Let's see what we can do with you once you get into one of my organizations. Caroline, make sure these three are fed, and let's get up to our box seats for the show. Billy, it was great to meet you. You three are doing a great job. Keep up the good work.
With that, Stump, Jorge, and six other people left. Caroline and one other person remained. Caroline passed on the instructions to this person, and soon Billy and Jack were eating, much to Fat's chagrin.
Fat left, following Caroline and her assistant up the stairs to the stage. Billy buried his face in a sandwich, and Jack ate a large plate of fresh fruit. Billy said as intelligently as he could.
What?
Billy swallowed the large bite he'd been chewing.
This sandwich is great, but where's Fat going?
I'm sure he's burned up about us eating. He doesn't believe in eating on the job. If he had his way, we wouldn't be eating. But because Stump ordered the food, and I told you not to talk to him, he's going to let it slide. He just doesn't want to be here and to see us eating.
Stump seemed like a nice guy. Why didn't you want me talking to him?
For just this reason.
Jack pointed his thumb up the stairs after Fat. Billy flushed slightly at the gesture.
I mean, we're a team. We're supposed to be together.
But he sent me up there earlier. Why'd he do that?
Jack ate a piece of apple while Billy waited for an answer. Jack didn't look at Billy when he responded.
You see, we needed a moment to talk about you.
What did you two talk about? I mean, you were talking about me. Why couldn't you talk while I was here?
It wasn't regarding anything you needed to hear, that's all. It's really no big deal,
said Jack, more to his plate than to Billy.
Jack, my mom's always said, if you can't say something to a person's face, you shouldn't say it. What were you two talking about?
Billy didn't get his answer, as the door to the dressing room opened. Phil Smith exited, his brown scales bristled. Though he stood only slightly taller than Billy, seeing the scales ripple and click together disturbed Billy. He took a small step back and could feel the cold of the wall. Phil slammed the door closed and glared at Jack and Billy. Billy realized Jack had dropped his plate of fruit and also pressed against the wall. Phil leaned down and slowly removed his sunglasses. With his deep voice, he said softly,
I despise that woman, and if either of you repeat that, I'll eat you for breakfast.
Billy guessed Phil could do just that. The jagged, crooked teeth were yellow and dangerously sharp. There were deep scars on Phil's cheeks, where the protruding teeth obviously cut him and had since healed over. Beyond the teeth, Billy gazed dumbly into Phil's eyes. There were just tiny little black dots in his head. In his own nervous fashion, Billy decided to break the tension.
So, what did she say? Get out?
This brought a crooked smile to Phil's face. This made Billy more nervous, not less. Soon Phil's mouth opened, and the guttural sound emitted from it could only be identified as horrid laughter. Phil laughed long and loud and finally clapped his hands on Billy's and Jack's shoulders.
I like you two. What do you say we head up to the stage for a bit? I know you two are eating. Perhaps I can buy you something to drink.
But we're supposed to stay here and guard.
Jack didn't get to finish his sentence before Phil pushed him toward the stairs.
I don't take no for an answer. The concert isn't going to start for an hour at least, and we can sit right at the top of the stairs, so you'll be in view of the door the entire time.
Jack stumbled up the stairs in front of Phil and Billy. Phil put his arm around Billy and continued to talk.
You know, I wasn't always an agent. In fact, I'm still not officially an agent. I'm just friends with Celine's mother. That's how I got this job. Celine needed someone tough with a lot of business sense. Since I've got a business degree and run my own financial firm, her mother thought it would be a great thing for me to be her agent.
So, this isn't your regular job? Billy asked.
This doesn't even make a fifth of what I make on my regular job. Stump is the only person who rivals me here in Sethopolis, but for me to jump into his category, I'd need to make a lot more than I do now. Nah, I'd rather keep things simple the way they are. That gives me time to come to the concerts like this with Celine. Besides, she's the best singer I've ever heard. I'd probably be at all of her concerts anyway, so why not attend them and get paid for it?
So you're just here for money? Billy, getting into the conversation, felt his initial nervousness of Phil ease away. Phil led them to a large stone table, not too far away from the stairwell. He easily picked up the table and moved it nearer, so just as he said, they'd be able to look down the stairs while they talked. Once they were seated, Phil continued.
What was I saying? Oh, yes. No, I don't do it for the money. Sure, I make 15% on everything she does, and that's not a bad living for someone who's only doing that, but I've got my hands on a lot of other things around town.
Like what?
Jack, being the smallest at the table, just sat and remained silent and looked nervously about.
I'm into real estate development like Stump, but that's not my main business. My main business is chain stores.
Billy's face twisted with confusion.
How much money can you make from selling chains?
Phil laughed hard.
You're a funny one. That's why I like you.
He's serious, though, Jack told Phil.
Really? You've never heard of a chain store?
No, he hasn't. This is his first day in town.
Billy shrugged.
Well, a babe in the woods, are we? Let me see if I can explain. I started out a long time ago with just one store. People liked it, so I opened a second store with the same name, but in a different location. Do you follow?
Billy thought for a moment, then nodded his head.
Good. So once I had two stores, I opened a third, again with the same name, but in a different location. I then opened a fourth.
Same name, different location.
You're catching on. See, by having the same name, people can just ask for the store by name, and no matter where they are in Sethopolis, they can find one of my stores. Now, as you can imagine, it's very difficult to manage so many stores. Can you guess what I did?
Billy's eyes widened. He had no idea, but he wanted to find out.
I sold franchises.
Phil paused to let this sink in before he continued.
I allowed other people to open stores with my name and have to pay me for the right to do that. Now I make 10% of the profit of that store, and I don't have to do anything but find a bigger bank vault.
Phil laughed. Billy still didn't understand.
But what if they don't pay? How do you make sure someone doesn't open a store with your name and doesn't pay you?
Oh, that's easy. Do you think anybody wants me in their store telling them to change their name?
Phil's scales bristled and puffed up until he was nearly twice his already imposing size.
Oh! I protect my investment.
Billy thought to word his next question carefully.
What are you?
I'm Phil Smith, founder of Smith Convenience Stores.
That's you?
Jack asked, nearly leaping out of his seat. Phil smiled.
Have you ever seen anyone else make that statement?
Well, no.
And you never will. I make sure of that.
That's so incredible. I've read all about your rise to fame in your book, but there's no picture of you in the book. How have you managed to get so famous and still be unknown?
Jack was obviously starstruck. Billy just sulked for a moment until he could ask his question.
That's part of the reason I became Celine's agent. I'd remained in hiding for so long, it was difficult to hire help and get those stores started looking like I do. I tend to frighten people away rather than attract them. It took me years to get the business going. I still couldn't go out into public. Being around Celine has allowed me some of that freedom I crave.
But, Billy interrupted, what are you? I mean, you're obviously not human. You're most definitely not an elf or anything like that. What type of being are you?
Are you serious? No one has ever asked me that,
Phil said, rubbing his chin with his massively clawed hand.
I'm a Bacladian.
Billy and Jack exchanged looks of confusion.
I'm not from here,
Phil said, as if that cleared the air.
From here, you mean Sethopolis? Jack asked.
No,
Phil said cautiously, pointing at the ground.
I'm not from here.
I still don't understand, said Billy.
I'm not from this planet.
Jack nearly fell off his chair trying to scramble away from Phil and Billy. His eyes wide in fear, he scrambled backwards and into Fat.
What you doing here? You should be downstairs, Fat scolded. You too, why are you up here?
I brought them, Phil said. Please, sit and join us.
No thanks,
Jack shivered and trembled.
I'm still just Phil, my friend. You know, I don't even know your name.
I'm Jack in the Box, but I still won't sit down with you. Why not?
Fat asked.
Phil just told us that he's not from this planet. I don't understand what that means, Billy said, still unfazed by Phil's confession.
Please, sit. Let me explain.
Fat pulled on Jack's arm and forced Jack to sit down, Fat's face full of intrigue. Billy thought it interesting that Fat actually showed interest in something other than protecting Celine.
I've never told anyone this, and I don't know why I'm telling you three now. Maybe it's all those long years of being hidden and then being quiet around Celine. I guess it's just something I've always wanted to tell another person.
How you come here?
Well, you know what ships are, right?
That sail across the oceans? Billy asked, happy to be involved with such an important conversation.
Exactly. Well, think of a ship that's completely enclosed and flies.
Like a dragon?
Except much, much higher. A ship that can sail between stars. That's how I got here.
What? Billy didn't understand. Phil looked at the sky and pointed.
See those stars up there? Most of them have planets, just like yours. Your sun was just another star to me, so I decided to visit it. Unfortunately, I ran out of power, and I thought I could refuel here.
What's fuel?
Like gas. Wait, you don't have gas here either. It's like when you make a fire and you keep adding wood to it. Think of wood as fuel. Once it's gone, your fire goes out. That's what happened to my ship.
What kind of fuel did your ship use?
Not wood, I can tell you that. It used a material, much like a rare stone, I've only seen once or twice on your planet, but in such small quantities that it would never get me off your planet. I doubt I'll ever leave your planet and go back home.
Maybe I can help, Billy offered.
What's your name again?
Asked Phil.
I'm Billy Barbarian.
I like you, Billy. I tell you what, once you're done with this guard bit here, give me a call.
Phil pulled a small stone card from his pocket. It had words on it, but Billy wasn't sure what those words meant.
Even if you can't help me, I can help you. Just come to that address and ask for me.
Billy showed the card to Jack. Jack nodded.
Thanks.
Billy smiled at Phil. Phil returned the smile.
I say, we never did get those drinks, did we?
We go back to work,
Fat said flatly.
Very good. Later then. Perhaps we can grab a drink during the concert.
Phil patted Billy on the back and left. Billy felt a kinship with Phil. They were both in Scythopolis, far from home. He wondered how many other people like Phil might be in this big city. He also wondered if he could actually do anything to help Phil, perhaps finding some of this stone he needed. He would need more time to think about that. Billy's mind lingered on Phil's dilemma, even after they'd gone back downstairs, and once again stood guard at Celine's door. He wondered about how Phil knew Celine's mother. Is it possible that Phil knows my mother? He couldn't recall his mother ever saying anything about a scaly giant from another star. Hearing from someone as far away as Scythopolis was rare enough, but another star? Certainly he would have remembered that. Fat and Jack looked bored. Billy thought he could show them a game to play while they waited. A simple game he used to play with his father during a hunt, when they would wait for a deer or other animal to wander by. He leaned in to say something, but stopped. Fat had that "don't talk to me" look in his eye, and Jack shook his head for Billy to just back away and keep quiet. So Billy did. He stared blankly at the wall for a while, then looked at the door, then up at the stairs. He wasn't sure, but quite certain he'd never been as bored. The sounds from the audience continued to grow. He longed to go back up the stairs and look at something different, but he couldn't. He needed a reprieve. He turned once again to say something to Jack, but again the door to Celine's dressing room opened and interrupted him. This time, one of the troop of people that had gone into the room hours before came out.
She is almost ready to go on stage. She just needs to get into costume.
Costume? Billy asked.
It's what she'll be wearing once she's on stage. Remember those racks of clothes? Well, those are the outfits. She'll probably change 4 or 5 times when she's on stage. That keeps it from getting boring for the audience to see her in that same outfit for the next 2 or 3 hours.
Jack jumped up and put his hands in his pocket.
That really tickles, doesn't it?
Jack turned and moved down the hallway a short distance and talked into the orb. After a moment, he turned back to Billy and Fat.
He wants to talk to all of us.
Billy wondered what other instructions they could get from Iman. He and Fat took up sides next to Jack.
Now that all three of you are here, I want to know how things are going. Fat, report.
No unusual sighting. Everything fine.
Jack, is anything out of the ordinary?
All is going well.
There was a long pause.
Billy?
Yes.
Report.
What am I supposed to report?
Jack answered. Have you seen anything out of the ordinary?
Oh, let's see. We saw Mr. Stump. He's actually a really nice guy. We met Phil Smith, who says he's from another planet.
That's not what I want to know, Iman said, irritated. I want to know, have you seen any people that didn't look like they belong there?
Oh, well, Billy thought for a moment. When I was upstairs, Jack and Fat sent me away for a minute. I saw...
Wait. Fat, is this true? You sent Billy away on his own? You let him walk alone around the stage?
Fat looked angrily at Billy.
Jack and I needed...
I don't care what you and Jack were doing. You were not to let Billy out of your sight for the rest of the night. Do you understand me?
Yes, sir.
Billy, I'm sorry for that. Please, continue.
Billy mouthed sorry to Fat, and then continued.
When I was up around the stage, I saw four men in black robes. I followed them for a bit, and then I lost the robed guys. I'm not sure where they went.
They are harmless. I would not worry about them. If you see them, or any others, just leave them be. I'm sure they're not up to anything special.
Fat looked concerned.
What if they have no badges?
Your only concern is to keep Celine in your sight.
That, and keep together. It is imperative that the three of you remain together. I will meet you at some point during the concert. The orb's soft blue glow diminished and finally dissipated. The fact that Iman was so insistent about them remaining together bothered Billy. Though wandering around alone had been a little scary, he enjoyed it.
So what do we do now? Asked Jack as he pocketed the orb. We wait and escort her to stage.
Billy wondered if Fat ever did anything fun or if he always had that serious air about him. Well, Billy thought about this. He also wondered if he could chance another quick excursion back up to the stage area. Perhaps Steve could show him some other things. He looked up the stairwell and wished he could go back up.
Everything was going as planned. Celine Dijon's concert would go off on schedule. Fat and Jack were in place with the rube Billy, who would take the fall for her death, and no one would suspect the real danger. Iman laughed, a loud and hearty laugh. He stood on his balcony and overlooked the stadium. The throngs of people still flooded into the city, and most of those people filled the stadium. How could he ask for more? Everything moved along so nicely. He had spent a great deal of time planning for this day, and now the fruits of his labors were coming to fruition. He only needed to get to the stadium, but he would wait until the concert actually started so he could slip in unnoticed. Celine's show was a perfect front for his plan. Iman strode back into his chambers and sat behind his desk. With a wave of his hand, he called forth a simple goblet and a bottle of wine. He had had enough time to satisfy his thirst before he left. His fingers curled around the green glass bottle like a snake constricting on its prey. He marveled at the blood-red color and the sour reek that filled his nose as he poured. He liked nothing better than a glass of turned wine. Perhaps he'd have a second glass before he left. No. Better to save the second glass for after he'd achieved his victory. He wanted to have a clear head for this evening. Iman took a deep breath through his nose to take in the foul bouquet of the wine and drank it down in one swallow, only allowing it to stay in his mouth long enough to savor the bitterness.
Be prepared, Ronald. For tonight, I come for you. No longer will I live in your shadow. No longer will I suffer to hear how great is the good Ronald Stump. Better to live with your memory than to live with you. Tonight,
It's all about me. All about me. Iman closed his eyes and took in another deep breath and smiled. All about me. He nodded. He waited. He waited for the crowd to cheer. That would be his cue to work his way to the stadium. His cue to be the downfall of Ronald Stump and his entire empire. Today, Ronald Stump. Tomorrow, the world. Again, Iman threw his head back and laughed a long, wicked laugh. Thank you for taking the time to listen to The Continuing Adventures of Billy Barbarian. For more information on this book and its author, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com or jrmurdoch.com. And again, thank you for listening.